happy spring and welcome back to Vandenberg Flash Focus, your source for fast and focused foreign policy analysis on breaking news around the world. I'm your host, Sophie Singletary, and today I'm thrilled to be joined by Bonnie Glick, Senior Fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, Senior Advisor with the Project on Prosperity and Development at CSIS, and a valued advisory board member here at Vandenberg. Bonnie also served as Deputy Administrator and Chief Operating Officer of the U.S. Agency for International Development during the last administration. A career Foreign Service Officer, Bonnie has a robust understanding of Middle Eastern affairs and is here today to offer valuable insights on the region's recent developments. Today, we discuss the helicopter crash carrying Iran's president and foreign minister on board and the International Criminal Court's issuance of arrest warrants for Israeli leaders. These weakened developments in the Middle East have thrown an already unstable region into further turmoil. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi, among other officials, were determined dead after a helicopter crash along the Iranian border with Azerbaijan on Sunday. Raisi, also known as the, quote, butcher of Tehran, was considered a top contender to succeed the 85-year-old Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei. On the same day his death was confirmed by Iranian media, the International Criminal Court, or ICC, unveiled arrest warrants for Hamas leadership and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Minister of Defense Yoav Gallant. Today, we're lucky to be joined by Bonnie Glick to understand the implications of the leadership shakeup in Iran and the significance of the ICC's warrant filings on top Israeli leadership. Bonnie, it is a joy to welcome you to Flash Focus.
Sophie, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So to kick us off here, I'm wondering if you could tell us who is Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi and what is the significance of his death for the state of the Iranian government?
Sure. Well, firstly, I'll say who was Ibrahim Raisi. We'll call him the former president of Iran. I like that sound. But more colloquially, as you said, he was referred to as the butcher of Tehran. And he was personally responsible for ordering the deaths of thousands, if not tens of thousands, of Iranians. He was infamous in the 1980s as a radical revolutionary, and he later donned clerical robes and became a man of the cloth, only to order the executions of thousands of more Iranians. He launched attacks on Israel last month, and he certainly was behind ordering the October 7th attack through Iran's vassals in Hamas.
Raisi's death comes at a time of extraordinary tension in the Middle East, sparked by the Iranian-backed Hamas attack against Israel on October 7th, as you mentioned. In the context of this proxy war between Iran and Israel, do you think the Iranians are paranoid enough to blame the Israelis for this crash? And if so, do you anticipate Iran would take action against Israel?
Well, Sophie, Israel has stated officially that it had nothing to do with the helicopter crash. And that may be true. Take the Israelis at their word, because Raisi had a lot of enemies within Iran itself. So don't forget, he was behind the scenes of the crackdown post-2009 when Iran held elections, and it looked like there might be an effort to change governments through what the Iranians were calling the Green Revolution, so that Iran might become more moderate. Unfortunately, the Obama government didn't see fit to support the Iranian revolution, and there was a massive crackdown and massive number of executions following the failed Green Revolution. He was behind the scenes there. The mullahs wouldn't allow for freedoms in Iran, and Raisi was their henchman. In 2022, with the murder of Mahsa Amini, the young Kurdish Iranian woman who was arrested and then brutally beaten to death by Raisi's secret police for not properly wearing a hijab, he was behind that and all of the protests and turmoil that have erupted since then. So needless to say, there was a lot of rejoicing in Iran itself when news of the helicopter crash hit the airwaves. In fact, there were fireworks and partying that were captured on the internet coming out of Iran. So Israel says they didn't do it. I believe that. America says we didn't do it. I believe that. It could have been an internal sabotage. It could have been that, poor maintenance of the helicopter. It could have just been the weather. Who knows?
And per the Iranian constitution, they have to hold elections within 50 days of his death. And I believe this morning they announced a date for these elections. What do you anticipate Tehran's next steps, both politically and kind of diplomatically, mean for the broader Middle East, particularly our ally Israel?
Well, there will certainly be no succession fight or drama that play out in Iran. As much as people question our elections here in America about being free from interference and corruption, that's not even a thing in Iran. The Supreme Religious Council will come up with a slate of what we'll just vaguely call competitors for president, but they will have already selected who is going to serve in that role. And there will be a fig leaf of an election, but the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, will pronounce whoever has been selected by the Supreme Council to be the next president. Even if Iranians were allowed to vote freely, there is not a chance that their votes would actually count for anything. There will be no international observers to determine the freedom and fairness of the election. So it's all pre-cooked. The bigger question may be that now that they kind of they've been forced to focus on succession of president, there will be some discussion behind closed doors of who will replace Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, who really holds all of the control in Iran, because he's 85 years old. President Raisi was a spring chicken at like 63 years old, but an 85-year-old supreme leader is not going to live forever, darn. And there has to be a conversation going on about who would replace him. Raisi was thought to be a likely candidate. Now that obviously changes the calculus.
And in the couple days since Raisi's death, what has been the response from the Biden administration? And how do you think the United States and Israel could capitalize on this political uncertainty, if at all? Or is it naive to think we could influence a potentially less terrorism-promoting replacement?
So that's a good question. The Biden administration's response has been absolutely nothing short of embarrassing. America should be raising the roof in joy that an evil man has met his maker. That's what America did when President Trump took out Qasem Soleimani, the head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. Instead, the State Department issued an official condolence message. Now, how on earth anyone thought this was a good idea is beyond me. An official condolence message to a country with whom we don't even have official relations. I think the last official U.S. engagement with the homicidal mullahs in Iran was in 1981, when Ronald Reagan freed the hostages who were held by the Iranian regime for 444 days. They were State Department American hostages. Why Secretary of State Tony Blinken doesn't use this as an opportunity to demand the release of hostages held by Iran's puppet, Hamas, would be what a real leader would do, especially since five of them, if not more, are American citizens. That's the American response, which has been an embarrassment. Israel, I think, is likely looking at ways to exploit the gap in leadership and the little bit of breathing space they may have for conducting operations in their just war against Hamas.
We shall see what the future holds and if our administration recognizes this problem and corrects for their lackluster response thus far. But shifting now to the ICC and the arrest warrants, I'm wondering if you can outline what the specifics are of this latest ICC arrest warrant on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, who, according to the report, bear criminal responsibility for a series of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Charges that Hamas, the party responsible for this war, I will remind listeners, has been found guilty of. I'm wondering, what are the consequences of this false moral equivalence?
Well, Sophie, I feel bad that this podcast is so cynical, or I am. But the International Criminal Court, which is nothing more than a kangaroo court, has effectively equated Hamas's genocidal attack on Israel on October 7th, the brutal murders, immolations, rapes, torture, and kidnapping of Israelis and others. The ICC has equated that with Israel's just war to free the hostages, destroy Hamas, and ensure that another October 7th can't happen. The charges are outrageous of using starvation as a tactic in war. That is absurd. Israel has allowed more aid into the Gaza Strip by a factor of 4 to 5 to 6 more than prior to October 7th. Yesterday, for example, 402 trucks full of aid came into Gaza. There's just a report I was looking at before we started talking that came out on the Jewish News Syndicate by Joshua Marks saying that nearly 70% of the Gaza aid from the U.S.-built pier was stolen. So Saturday was the first day that Joe Biden's brilliant idea of building a floating pier that nobody asked for into Gaza would be the key move by the United States to bring assistance to the Palestinians. Well, day one, the aid, which was on its way to UN warehouses, 75% of it at least never made it there. It was all stolen. Now, this is what happens when you operate without a plan. And so while this is a little bit off topic, I thought it was useful to raise the issue in the context of this absurd kangaroo court claim that Israel is using starvation as a tool. The other thing to note is that America is not party to the ICC. We're not a member of this artificial justice system, and neither is Israel. Both countries know that we have our own judicial systems that are designed and effective at meting out justice, and they don't need an international body to serve as an arbiter. But beyond that, this crew of yahoos at the ICC has never issued an arrest warrant for the mullahs in Iran, never for Bashar al-Assad in Syria for using chemical weapons against his own population, never against the military junta in Burma that prosecutes Muslim Rohingya, and never against Xi Jinping for perpetrating a genocide against Uyghur Muslims. The only warrants it's issued against world leaders like Bibi Netanyahu are completely unlike Bibi Netanyahu. They have issued warrants for Vladimir Putin and for Omar al-Bashir in Sudan. And now they lump a democratically elected prime minister and his defense minister our closest allies in the Middle East with the likes of Putin, it just doesn't get much more cynical.
As you just outlined, it's clear that this most recent arrest warrant by the ICC is driven by the same anti-Israel animus that has long dominated the UN and other international bodies. And as you just said, neither the US nor Israel are party to the ICC. When you served in the Trump administration, y'all sanctioned the ICC in retaliation to the court targeting US personnel. I'm wondering, what do you believe the proper response from the Biden administration and our Western allies should be?
Well, the US and Israel are not members of the ICC, and thus, under sovereign laws, they're not party to the pronouncements of the court. So really what the court did in announcing warrants for the arrest of Prime Minister Netanyahu and his defense minister is to say it's open season on Israelis. Right now, it's the prime minister, but we'll probably feel free to arrest random Israelis who are traveling around the world because they all serve in the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. And maybe we can say that the IDF committed war crimes. It's nonsense. We've never supposed that this is something that we can support. We know that it can be used against our own servicemen and women, which is why we sanction the ICC. And we in the US, like Israelis in Israel, have a democratic government that operates based on the rule of law, and justice systems can police and prosecute their own citizens here in the United States, as well as in Israel.
Thinking more broadly here, lest we forget, Israel is still actively fighting this war against Hamas since October 7th. I'm wondering if, to wrap us up here, you can speak to what the implications of these ICC arrest warrants will be on hostage negotiations, Israel's general ability to defend itself, and kind of the status of the war in Gaza and the Middle East more broadly.
Thanks. It's a great question. Karim Khan is the prosecutor of the ICC, and he's the one who issued these warrants. His wanton disregard for democratic norms is nothing more than a continuation of a centuries-old blood libel against Jews. His claim that Israel is purposely starving the population is a documented falsehood. Rather, if anyone in Gaza is suffering, it's because of Hamas and its cronies in UN organizations that partnered with the ICC in this outrageous action. So you can take UNRWA, for example, the UN agency that is supposed to take care of Palestinians, instead has its employees cooperate with Hamas in stealing humanitarian aid and secreting it away to UNRWA warehouses. And we've seen documented that UNRWA employees, who happen also to be employees of Hamas, sell it in the open market for shared profits. This is free humanitarian aid is sold by Karim Khan's cronies within the UN system. So his announcement of warrants is timed exactly so that the world's attention will shift from the UN and Hamas war crimes and Hamas genocide to Israel's prosecution of the just war that it's fighting. So, Sophie, that's my greatest fear. Each and every time there's a delay in Israel's ability to complete its war aims, which are, to repeat, securing the release of all the hostages, defeating Hamas, and eliminating any chance that Hamas will rise again to commit atrocities against Israel. Every time there's a delay, it endangers the hostages. When there's a moral equivalence placed by this illegitimate court on Prime Minister Netanyahu, with the world's worst war criminal, Yahya Sinwar, Hamas gets a new lease on life. It gets breathing room. And as we've seen across our country and in Europe, it breeds more anti-Semitism on campuses, online, and in government pronouncements. It's absolutely sickening. I wish I could say that the court acted in good faith. It most certainly did not. But I would like to end with a point that U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham made. He is enraged at this ICC pronouncement and said that the court has gone rogue. He also said that he engaged with the ICC on this very issue weeks ago, and he was told that there would be discussions with Israel before any action was taken by the ICC. He said he stressed that the principle of something called complementarity should be applied in this case. Complementarity requires the ICC to let the nation in question's legal system, so here Israel, that Israel is allowed to move first before any action is taken by the court. Karim Khan's team was supposed to be in Israel to arrange a meeting for this week or next week with Israel's prosecutor's office about the allegations. Senator Graham was told by ICC staff that the investigation would likely take months and not weeks, and that there would be meaningful consultation with the state of Israel. Instead of the ICC following through with scheduled consultations with Israel, they announced warrants. He is angry and says he was lied to. He's right to be angry, and he's right that the anti-Semitic prosecutor and his minions acted in bad faith. They have undercut the mission of the court and demonstrated, as I said earlier, that they belong in a jack-in-the-box, not in prosecutor's robes. It's a kangaroo court.
Well, Bonnie, I wish I had a positive question to end us here, but alas, such is the reality of the Middle East. But I will say my thanks to you for joining us today on Flash Focus and for breaking it all down. My thanks to you.
Thank you so much, Sophie. It was really fun.
And thank you all for listening. Until next time, I'm your host, Sophie Singletary, and this is Vandenberg Flash Focus.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.